Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
It's about me. And this has really been a project of pushing myself out into the world, pushing myself to not be ashamed of my voice, pushing myself to not be ashamed of who I am, of my experience, of the way that I react to things. It's been healing to me to slowly be able to make myself, my real self, visible to the world, whether it scares me or not.
I'm delighted to share that this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by an artist, mother, and tax expert, Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax. Is your creative practice gaining steam? Maybe you just got a big grant or a big show. You're excited to get to work, but a nagging feeling tells you that there are some tax issues that could hurt you. What you don't know might actually be holding you back from all that you can accomplish. You just want to get down to the studio and do the work you love, but finances and tax concerns are dragging you down. Thankfully, Sunlight Tax is here for you. Artist and tax pro Hannah Cole started Sunlight Tax to empower creative people with the tax and money tools you need so you can have more money, more time, and make a bigger impact with your work. Who doesn't want that? Sunlight Tax offers an annual membership called Money Bootcamp, which is tailored to your busy creative life to teach you targeted skills for your financial health and taxes. Hannah guides you through the pitfalls into simple systems so you can stay on track, start investing in yourself, and get back to the studio without getting bogged down. Right now, listeners of the Artist Mother Podcast can get a free artist tax deduction guide by going to sunlighttax.com/artistmother. That's sunlighttax.com/artistmother. Thank you, Hannah, for providing so much to artists and helping us through with all of our financial concerns. It's so reassuring to have experts like you we can trust and we know are looking out for us. Head to sunlighttax.com to find out more about everything Hannah has to offer, and don't forget your free artist tax deduction guide just for our community at sunlighttax.com/artistmother. I'm delighted to welcome two incredible people from the city of Minneapolis, Minnesota, to the podcast to share about their lives and their journeys as queer artist mothers. Welcome to Jessica Kitzman and Candida Gonzalez. Jessica Kitzman has been teaching art in the K-12 public schools around the Twin Cities since 2009 and is a strong advocate for the creative freedom of all kids. She earned a BFA from the University of Iowa and an MAT from the School of Visual Arts. Primarily working in textiles and collage, her own studio practice centers around the deconstruction of domestic relics and other found materials as a mode for understanding inherited systems of power and identity. Jessica is represented by a stay-home gallery in Paris, Tennessee. And Candida Gonzalez is passionate about arts education, community engagement through the arts, and equitable arts access. They have worked as an arts program coordinator, curator, arts integration educator, and co-founded a national public art business in 2016, and now works as an arts consultant and independent artist. Welcome, Jessica and Candida. I am so happy to have you here today.
Thank you, Kaylin.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm so happy to share in this conversation. Okay, so always like to start by having you point us back to something in childhood that you feel like connects to you, your life as an artist today. Just kind of interested to hear if you've always wanted to be an artist, if you can kind of pull that thread through childhood up till now. Candida, can you start for us?
Oh, making me start. Put me in the hot spot. Okay, great. Yes. So actually, as I was thinking about this question, three separate things came to mind, and I'll just touch on them very briefly. First of all, I can't remember a time in my life where art wasn't present. I grew up with a lot of music and dancing from my father and my mother, and then started drawing and creating, I think, as soon as I could hold a crayon, a pencil. This art that I do now just feels like an extension of what I was born to do and to be. Mm-hmm. The name of my jewelry company is called Las Ranas, which means the frogs in Spanish. My family likes to tell stories about how when I was a baby, I had a book that had a frog on one of the pages, and I was obsessed with that page and would always just want to go to that page. And frogs have been, somewhat of an animal guide for me throughout my life. So it just made sense when I was creating this new project, it would be Las Ranas. And then funny story, I was kind of a geek in junior high, and I remember in seventh grade convincing my teachers to allow me to do a gallery show in the hallway of my drawings of Greek mythology based on Dolaire's book of Greek mythology, which I was obsessed with. As you can imagine, that did not gain me many friends in seventh grade. I was really shocked by that. I was like, what? Other people don't like Greek mythology too? Come on. Heavily plays into the work that I do now, and its relation with classic astrology. So, to all the haters back in junior high, look at me now,
Yes, I love that. I love that idea of just those things that kind of are our guides that maybe you don't realize it was at the time. Like it was important to you, and then you kind of look back years later and you're like, oh, like that was there. It was always there. And, just something that kind of has been part of your story. I love that. Jessica, what about you? Can you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in a similar position as Candida. Art has always been there for me. I don't remember life before art. It was always part of the fabric of my family, part of my everyday life. I was always the quiet kid in the corner drawing. And I think that thread that you were talking about, that like, oh, that's always been there. And kind of reflecting about, how my art life has been in the last, since college, it's really been my hiding place. And I think that's what art was for me, especially in elementary school, just a way to kind of cope with my social anxiety and have something to have an outlet for that and for all the things in my head and everything that I experience. And so I think art has always been kind of my way of understanding my world, and it's been my way of healing, and it's just, it's just part of me. And now I feel like I'm more able to be seen with my art than I ever have been. That's been my experience with it growing up. And like I said, it was in the fabric of my family. My grandfather was an artist. He taught at Iowa State University and just passed away this past fall. And we estimate that he painted somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 to 1,200 paintings in his life. He was just a prolific artist until about 2 months before he died. That connection to art, that lifelong connection to art of just doing it for the joy of it, and because that's how he experienced his body, that feels very similar to how I experience art.
Jessica, can you talk a little bit about what your work looks like and some of the materials you use?
Yeah, my work is, if you first see it, it is very bright and very full of texture. I use mainly found textiles, fabrics, trims, embellishments, and other just, I call them domestic relics, that normally I thrift most of them, but then some of them are donated. I use some items from my own home and my own life, old clothing, dish towels with burns or rips. Just, I think the thread that connects all of my materials is that they are found and have had a past life in somebody's home, whether it's mine or somebody else's. And I deconstruct those items and form these very playful abstract compositions that are, I would say, heavily influenced by play and my experience with working with children making art, both in schools and watching my own kids make art. And I feel like play is central to my process because it's really a form of resistance for me. I have very perfectionistic tendencies, and this is kind of my way of staying out of that trap. And so, yeah, that playfulness does really inform my process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's visible in most of my work.
Definitely. Candida, what about you? Can you talk a little bit about what your work looks like and some of the materials and processes that you use?
Yeah. So my art, the art that I'm really focusing on these days, is jewelry making. And I would technically call it mixed media assemblage. I also think of it as mini sculptural work or mini spells. Each piece that I create is really actually a spell. I could talk more about that later. I was really blown away when I first saw, I really should know the name of this artist. I believe it's Lawrence Weiner, had a phrase up on the Walker Art Center many years ago that said, bits and pieces put together to create a semblance of a whole. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, I feel seen. That is me, that is my work, that is the universe. And so I go back to that all the time with my jewelry. So yeah, if you haven't seen my jewelry before, it's very colorful, it's very big. It's mostly a mix of acrylic, acetate, brass. I used to travel for work all the time before COVID hit. So I would use my work trips as trips to also go to thrift stores and bead stores and jewelry stores and find stuff to make my jewelry all over. I don't get to do that anymore. I really miss digging around in bins for pieces. So I do a lot of looking on the internet these days for like vintage brass and vintage lucite. And then I also work with a lot of rocks and crystals. I'm a huge believer in the different properties of crystals. Also symbolism, numerology, color theory, it's all a part of my work.
I love that. And are you wearing some of your work right now?
I am. I made these. These I made a year and a half ago, I think. I was inspired by the cover of Janata Petrus's young adult book that had just come out.
Awesome. I love that. Okay. I want to hear from both of you just a little bit about what the art scene is like where you live. I have never been to Minneapolis, but I know there's a pretty good art scene there. And, you know, I think the art scene sort of is going to look different for both of you. Jessica, like having more a textile based, like fine art practice, and then Candida having more assemblage and, you know, jewelry. But just interested to hear how both of you perceive the art community and if you feel like it's a good place for you to plug in, if you're, you know, feel enriched by your community, or if it, you know, if it's a little lacking and you would like something else. Jessica, why don't you start?
Yeah. I mean, I think Minneapolis is lucky to have all of the variety. Like, I don't think there's just one art scene. I think there's something for everyone here. And so, you know, my experience as an artist in Minneapolis, is just my experience. And I feel like there's so many other layers that I haven't even tapped into yet. But I can tell you that when I first moved here, let's see, that was 2006. I was volunteering with AmeriCorps, and one of the after-school teachers at the elementary school that I worked with also worked and was on the board at Intermedia Arts. And so that was my first experience kind of in any kind of art scene in Minneapolis. And I am grateful every day that I plugged into that community. Mm-hmm. It was an amazing place. I don't remember. So they closed in 2017. I sobbed. And I think they were like, you know, just a grassroots community run arts organization, nonprofit for about 35 years, I want to say.
Wow.
But I met a lot of really influential people through that organization that at a very formative time in my artist life. And so that experience was just one of pure community, pure creativity. It was a very unified space, and kind of art of the people kind of space. And so that's really, continues to be the heart of what I'm interested in, pursuing in Minneapolis and who I want to be connected to here.
Mm. Candida, what about you? Do you feel like you are enriched by the arts community, or do you feel like it's been a good place for you to plug in?
Yeah. Well, so the reality is that, you know, this jewelry project of mine is my artistic outlet, and you know, now during COVID is really paying the bills in a way that it wasn't before. But my big person real job is that I am a public art consultant, and this is work that I've been doing for a while. I mainly contract with Forecast Public Art, and I do career consulting for Springboard for the Art. And I've consulted or worked with all of the major arts organizations in the Twin Cities. And again, up until COVID started, I was traveling around the country teaching a workshop called Making It Public for Forecast Public Art. And so, you know, going into all of these communities and helping artists figure out how to get into the public art scene or how to grow their public art practice. And, you know, one thing that always struck me with whatever community I went into was how lucky we are in the Twin Cities to have the art scene that we have. Mm. We are very well funded. We have a lot of organizations that are doing great work. Yeah, we have organizations that are closing. I also cried when Intermedia had to shut down. That was a day. We have a lot of opportunities for artists that are not present in other places. And then, you know, there's kind of this double-edged sword of the art scene in Minnesota, because, you know, Minnesota culture is very opposite from my own culture. I'm Puerto Rican, Puerto Rican and Russian. My parents are from New York. And so, you know, we're very outspoken and loud and friendly. And that's not really Minnesota culture. So it's this weird thing where it's like, there are lots of opportunities to meet people and to go out and to be a part of the arts. But you come against that that Minnesota culture thing. And so eventually, you know, I think artists find themselves being a part of the scene. But sometimes it is difficult, especially if you're not from here. But yeah, I love the art scene that we have here in the Twin Cities. And I love that is my career. That is my life.
Mm, I love that. Yeah. I'm new to the Midwest. I just moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana, this past summer. And I'm from New York State, but lived 6-7 years in Tennessee. And I will say, Southern culture, you recognize it much more quickly. You're like, oh, that's Southern culture. And then I feel like Midwest, I mean, part of it is due to COVID too. Like I'm not really in contact with anybody, but it's like this slower introduction to like this Midwest politeness and reservation. And yeah, like I feel like I'm like slowly learning, oh, there is a different culture here that, you know, is kind of underwriting. So it's interesting the way you brought that up.
Yeah. I think I'm only aware of it as an adult, really. Yeah. Having grown up in the Midwest, I didn't know that we had culture.
Yeah. Have you lived your whole life in the Midwest, Jessica?
Yeah, I did my master's in New York City, but that was a year program. So okay. Other than that, yes, I've been in Iowa or Minneapolis.
So you're a Midwestern gal through and through.
I am. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also, my parents decided to move to Minnesota when they were pregnant with me. They were in the Bronx and they were like, they wanted that American dream. And so they moved here. And so I've grown up in Minneapolis, born and raised here, but also, you know, of these New Yorker parents. Right. And so it's been this like, okay, I recognize what it is, but I also can't stop being myself.
Right. You have a home culture. That's
an interesting journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the Artist Mother Network this month, we've been talking about the theme of visibility. And in January, we sort of broke that theme down kind of more in a more introspective way, like really turning visibility inward and like looking at ourselves and how to really take care of ourselves and to really know ourselves, we have to be willing to like see ourselves for who we really are. And this month, we're kind of focusing on visibility from the perspective of seeing those within our community and our network and the need to see our neighbors and our friends. So I was just, you know, I wanted to bring that term up to you because it's just been something that's been on my heart and something I've been thinking about a lot is this idea of visibility. So I'm wondering, like, what does visibility mean to you? And if you've ever felt invisible, either to yourself or to like your community. Jessica, you want to start for us?
Sure. I think I talked about this a little bit when I was talking about art as my hiding place. Mm-hmm. And I think when I became an art teacher, it was definitely a safe way to root myself in the creative process daily in a way that I didn't have to put myself out there and I didn't have to make my own art seen. Luckily that was the best thing I could have done because I got so much out of making art with kids and just being in that energy daily. And I continue to, it's different with COVID, but, it still influences me in very positive ways. I think I've grown a lot stronger in being able to be seen and being able to get my art out there and, to be able to feel like I have a voice and mm-hmm. that I have something to say and that I want a part in the conversation. I couldn't have done this interview a year ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I, in so many ways, but I think visibility to me is vulnerability. And it being seen is a very vulnerable thing. I'm going through a divorce. I've been divorced for 14 days now today. It is a celebration. Thank you. And I felt invisible in my relationship. And that kind of fed a lot of the rest of my life of feeling invisible there too. Definitely my life as a mother. I stayed home with my kids for 2 years before this school year going back to teaching. I think when I started to make art that was about my personal experience that I was in when I made my work that was at the Stay Home Gallery this fall called I Can't Feel My Roots. Mm-hmm. That was really the first piece where I wrote a statement about what I was going through in my personal life. And that was such a transformative experience because I got such a warm reaction from people that had also experienced divorce. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the first times that I felt like I wasn't alone in that experience and that it wasn't, you know, this thing wrapped in shame that I needed to hide. And so I think the more I can do that, the more I can heal. Mm-hmm. So visibility is really everything to me right now. Visibility is connection.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Candida, what about you? How do you think about visibility? Is it something that you feel like is important to you? And have you ever felt invisible?
Actually, I'm just quickly writing down the last thing that Jessica said because I thought it was so beautiful. Visibility is connection. I agree. I can talk a little bit about both invisibility and visibility. I think first, just on the topic of invisibility, there is a frustrating invisibility that is present in being a brown person in Minnesota. And, you know, this is something that I grew up with. This is something that happened to me last week that I was talking to my therapist about. Like, this has just been present throughout my life. And I think throughout anybody who has grown up brown, black, indigenous in Minnesota. And it's just the fact that people oftentimes don't see us for who we are. People look at me and they see my name. They see Candida Gonzalez and they're like, oh, obviously she's a Mexican Catholic poor person that doesn't have an education and, you know, is just coming into the arts or blah, blah, blah. People see my skin color. People see my name and they don't see me. And mm-hmm. It's frustrating and it's enraging and it makes me cry. It's, you know, it's just all the motions. But again, it's something that I've grown up with. I'm 43 years old. I've spent almost all my life in Minnesota. But yeah, it doesn't make it any easier. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes into the visibility piece. You know, as I've made my career in public art, like a big part of why I'm doing it and something that's important to me is making sure that BIPOC artists are visible mm-hmm. for who they are. And for the work that they do and not for who you want us to be and the work that you want us to do. Mm-hmm. And that's very simplified, but I'll just leave that at that. And then, you know, there's this piece of personal visibility, you know, personal visibility and the journey on really seeing who I am and putting my authentic self out into the world is the reason that I created the project Las Ranas. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about jewelry. It's not just about spells. It's not just about astrology. There's a big piece of it that if you read the captions on the work that I do when I post it on Instagram, it's about me. Mm-hmm. and this has really been a project of pushing myself out into the world, pushing myself to not be ashamed of my voice, pushing myself to not be ashamed of who I am, of my experience, of the way that I react to things, of the fact that I like Greek mythology, you know, so it's like so pushing back on those seventh grade girls and saying, no, you know, I am cool. Like it's, I like what I like and that's okay. And you know, so as I've been working through this project, it's been healing to me to slowly be able to make myself, my real self, visible to the world, whether it scares me or not. So yeah, I think about visibility and invisibility a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. I love everything both of you said. And too, just this idea of like offering, like doing everything we can so that people can show up wholly themselves, you know, and that we're not just looking for them to fulfill a need that we have. You know, I think that's like a very prevalent theme these days in the art world, even, you know, just having a specific ratio of like different skin tones on your feed. And like, I don't know, it's just this, because it like is this big cultural thing right now that we all are like feeling all this pressure, it does take away in some ways from, I don't know, just like hearing people's stories authentically, you know? And I really appreciate what you said, Candida, like about that, like just wanting to be seen just for you and for people to know your story, like not having another artist who has brown skin like on your gallery representation list or whatever it is.
Yeah. And also too, I think I love being visible in the work that I do, because a lot of times, and especially these days, artists of color are expected to create art about racism and social justice. And that's not all of who we are, yeah. You know? We have joy and we have laughter and we love color, and you know, we can create art outside of social commentary about race relations in the United States. And so I love that I get to do that and get to champion that others can do that too. And you're totally right. Like, are you being authentic in representation, or are you just throwing a name or a skin tone on a wall?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And too, like, Jessica, I know you and I have had this conversation just about like labels and how it's like there's this rise in sort of, you know, this need to like claim your identity authentically. But because we have limited language, right? Sometimes that just feels like putting a label on you. Like, you know, even the context of this podcast is like talking about queer mother identity. And I think sometimes too, within that label, you kind of limit the experiences that can be shared, because there are stereotypes, unfortunately, that exist. And I think, yeah, just thinking through this idea of like each person as a whole person and never allowing a label or a box that is checked or whatever it is to, I don't know, cause you to think you know somebody, you know, if you're not authentically connecting with them, like, or genuinely hearing their story, like not walking in with sort of these things that we make up, these narratives that we think we know somebody just because they have a rainbow flag on their Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think I have a rainbow flag on my Instagram. Oh my God. Oh, no.
I just put one.
Not gay. Shoot.
Yeah, it's just like interesting because there's like this juxtaposition between like wanting to feel free to like claim and own your identity, but then also not wanting to be boxed in, you know, and mm-hmm. only known for your identity.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think this is just a really interesting. I feel really connected to that exploration just within myself and in what boxes I put myself in. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something I'm exploring right now. I feel like I'm just getting to the point where I can explore my queer identity through my art, even though I came out 16 years ago. I came out while I was already in a committed relationship. And I don't think that I ever allowed myself to really explore what it meant for myself to be gay mm-hmm. outside of that relationship. And what, how I wanted to exist in the world as a queer person and what community I wanted to build around myself. I was definitely, still hiding, still not, feeling safe and secure to be my whole self. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm 14 days into that journey.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to like see all the ways that you show up for yourself, you know, on this not new journey, but this like different path that you're on.
Yeah, it's really exciting and very scary, but I think the community I've been able to tap into, I mean, really specifically around the Artist Mother podcast and the Stay Home Gallery, I feel so surrounded by love and support right now in starting that journey. And I mean, the more seen I feel, the more safe I feel. And that's a really new experience for me. And yeah, I'm excited to see where this road leads.
I'm proud to share that this episode of the Artist Mother podcast is sponsored by Faherty. Faherty is a family-run clothing brand fueled by purpose and optimism. They make high-quality, sustainably-minded, feel-good fragrances that you'll be proud to wear. This clothing that's made not just to last the season, but a lifetime of wear. For the past few years, I've recently tried to curb my clothes shopping habits and change what I wear to reflect my values. I've pared down my clothes to things I feel good in and feel good about, which means buying less fast fashion and making fewer purchases overall, but buying more high-quality pieces when I do buy my clothes. Faherty brand fits right into this model, and I'm kind of obsessed with their Arlie Day pants. They are super comfortable, but help me look slightly more put together than my usual yoga pants outfits. Anybody feel me? Faherty brand believes in social justice and has partnered with and supported some organizations you may recognize, like United Natives, Artists for Peace and Justice, the Trevor Project, and the Audre Lorde Project. They're also holding their company to a high standard with sustainability, designing clothes to last that are made with low impact on the environment. You can shop Faherty by heading to fahertybrand.com/artistmother. Use code ARTISTMOTHER, all lowercase, all together, for 25% off your purchase. It really means a lot when you support the brands that help support our podcast. Check out Faherty's website today and use code ARTISTMOTHER for a 25% off discount. That's pretty generous, guys. Thank you so much, Faherty, for supporting this podcast and our community. And now, back to our episode.
So we kind of brought you together to talk about this part of your journey, being a queer artist mother. And I just want to offer like the space for you to share a little bit more about your story for those in our community who want to see you, who want to know you, who want to hear what it's like, you know, to walk in your shoes. Jessica, you just shared a little bit. Candida, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I will say I identify a lot with what Jessica is talking about you know, this hiding and, you know, maybe having a hard time being visible and reaching out. That's why when Jessica said visibility is connection, I was like, oh, yes. Mm-hmm. What is my story? You know, I could keep going back and back. Where do I start? We'll just start here. In 2009 or 2010, I ended up going to rehab for 30 days, court ordered, to avoid jail time because I had slipped into a pretty bad drug addiction. I went to Pride for 30 days. And when I got out, I didn't have a place to live. And I had met a guy right before I went into rehab, and he was like, oh, you can live with me. And we started up a relationship, and I got pregnant. And then I had my first child, Luna, who is severely disabled. Mm-hmm. And this guy turned out to be not as he said he was, and was very abusive. And I was about to leave him. And then I found out I was pregnant with my second child. Mm-hmm. And I felt trapped, and I stayed. And you know, there was some good moments in those beginning years, but as the years went on, he knew that I was queer, and that turned into a point of contention. He became more and more violent. He became more and more physically and mentally abusive. And finally, in 2018, I left. Mm-hmm. I found the strength to leave. I fled. Mm-hmm. Left my house and left my kids because I was very scared of him. And in mid-2019, he ended up going to jail. And he is currently in prison, which was an incredible thing, a joyful thing. I mean, it's hard. He's the father of my kids, but it freed us all. You know, he'll get out eventually, but that's another story. But at least for the next 6 years, he's in jail. I feel like when I left him, that was a point of opening. But it wasn't until he was 100% gone that, I finally was able to fully start exploring this story of who I am as a mother, who I am as a queer mother, who I am as an artist, but then also doing that all on my own, you know, by myself, and then especially moving into COVID, absolutely by myself, which, you know, it was really hard. Again, you know, my 11-year-old can't walk, can't talk, needs to be fed, needs to be diapered. It was physically, emotionally demanding. And people all the time are like, how do you do it? And I'm like, you just do. Mm-hmm. I just do. You know, there is no other option. Am I doing it perfectly? Would a Pinterest mom come into my house and say, wow, you have it all together? No, absolutely not. I believe in unrestricted screen time. My house is a mess, but you can only do so many things in a day. And so I think that's been a part of my journey too, as a single working mom, mm-hmm. is, you know, how do I prioritize everything? How do I make sure that I have my time for my day job, my art, spend time with my kids, cook a meal or go to McDonald's? You know, I mean, something has to give all the time. And then another thing that I've come up with a lot, is, you know, in this time, not really now since COVID started, but, before that, I'm not willing to sacrifice my personal pleasure. People have really said explicitly to me, you are a bad mother because you continue to go out to the club and you're dating and you have sex and you have two kids to look after. And it's like, no, I'm not a machine. I was not born to
human
serve.
Being.
Yes, I am a human being. And yes, I have kids and that's great. And I do love them, but I also need to prioritize myself and my own pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's been lonely during COVID being single, but you know, perhaps when we come out of COVID, start to date again and maybe meet some nice people.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. Talk about like visibility and, you know, authentically connecting. Candida, thank you so much for sharing that. But just, yeah, that's something I've been like, I took a webinar. I'm not going to remember the name of the woman who led it, but it was something about like the maternal and the sexual and how like, you know, historically, there's like this big divide between like mothers can't like experience pleasure, basically. You know,
it's so like, frustrating.
Yeah. So yeah. I love that you brought that up, because it's just something I've been thinking about a lot, and, you know, have been having conversations with other peers about that.
I am a mother and I like sex. There, I said it.
Yes. Yes. Jessica, what about you? Do you want to share a little bit more about your journey, and just, yeah, anything else you want the community to know about your story?
I don't know. Like I said, I feel like this has been a very isolating journey so far for me. And a lot of that is, you know, on me. I have actively hid from a lot of myself and a lot of opportunities, I guess, to connect. And so a lot of it for me is learning how to not shame myself for that and keep moving and continue to see and be confident in my own worth. And, you know, I effectively have never dated before. Like, you know, I, especially as a gay woman, like that's just not something that I've done. I fell in love with my ex, and that was that. It was almost a decision I made that rocked my life so much that I think it scared me into, you know, what happens when this relationship isn't here. And so I think, and I will also say that that visibility for queer people today is vastly different than it was when I came out in college. There was no language for non-binary people. They did not, I mean, at least in my world and in my language and in my communities, I didn't have language for they, them. I didn't have language for the feelings I was having about being a feminine woman that was also gay. Those two contradicted each other very much. And getting that feedback from people in my life was very difficult. And I don't think that I was strong enough to hold on to the different parts of my identity that were authentic. I definitely fell into a lot of people-pleasing behavior, to the point where it's hard for me to untangle what started where and what was real and what wasn't. It's a very messy thing to reflect on. And so, I mean, I'm very excited to date. I am excited to see what it's like to, you know, connect with people that can connect back with me. Yeah. That's going to be a completely new experience to have my feelings seen and heard in a relationship, and to feel valued by someone. And I have a lot to figure out about, you know, who I want that person to be and what things are on my list of, you know, my non-negotiables and what I want for my life with somebody. So I am a proud member of Al-Anon for the past 18 months, which is a 12-step program for families and friends of alcoholics. And it's modeled very similar to AA. So I have a sponsor, and I'm so grateful for my relationship with him. But one thing we were talking about this, and he said, you know, what if you went into it having a checklist for yourself? Like, what do you need make that checklist before you make a checklist about, you know, who you want someone, the other person to be.
Right.
And that's like brand new information that I can do that, that my needs can come first in a relationship, that a relationship is not just about tolerance. I think that is going to be revolutionary for me moving forward. And it's really exciting.
I will say too, for you, the more that you live alone, the more that you'll realize, I don't want to sacrifice this for putting up with somebody. Like this is my sanctuary. If I'm going to invite somebody into it, they're adding to it, not taking away. And that feeling grows over, like, you know, over the time that you're single. So spoken as a person like 2.5 years into it. No, yeah.
Two and a half years, I mean, and one of those being COVID.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, what is single life after COVID? I have no idea. But I have started to really value my time alone in a way that I never thought I could do. However, I do still feel that heteronormative, toxic part of my brain saying, your family isn't whole. You are not whole without another person. Mm. I want to make it past that. Mm-hmm. To not have that voice in my head, or that need that pushes me into something that's not right or healthy for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also too, let's be real, the world hates single mothers. I mean, I run into it all the time, the little veiled comments. Even my brother, this summer, his fiance was like, why don't you help Candida with that? And he's like, oh, she's a single mom. She doesn't need anybody else for anybody. But the way that he said it, I was like, are you giving me props or are you, you're angry about the fact that I am a woman living by myself that doesn't need a man. How dare I? How dare I? You know, yet comments from just people at the grocery store, you know, whoever. It's I think that, again, like the more you run with it, the thicker skin you get. And then you get to the point where you're like, you know what? I am a single mom. I fucking can do 500 more things than you can do in a given. Yes. Do I like it? Maybe not all the time, but you know, we're strong and resilient, and we don't need another person to complete us.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, I do want to hear both of you share a little bit about like what specific support do you feel like you need? Do you feel like queer artist mothers, single mothers, women in the arts, mother in the arts, like what do you feel like the arts community could help provide for you that they're not already doing? And this can be like dreams, you know, but I think until we are willing to sort of like say, you know, I would like this. This would really help. You know, sometimes it's like you can't, I don't know, it's like you're not going to get that thing on your Christmas list unless you ask for it, right? So, like, how can we use this platform to, like, express what you need and start showing up for you in a more, like, tangible way?
I mean, I can go first. Yeah. You know, one of the first things that I think of is childcare. You know, and I'll just talk to my own situation, you know, coming out of a relationship that was abusive and isolating, you know, in which my abuser really did actively try to cut off all friendships from my life. You know, I come out and I don't have many relationships or, you know, a group of people. I don't have a village that I can depend on to help me with childcare, with things around the house, et cetera. And then just looking at the, you know, the art scene in general, like it's a lot of it is very individualized, you know, and why don't we have big studio buildings where there is, you know, a collective daycare on the first floor where moms can come and drop their kids off while they're doing the work. You know, it's in a lot of ways the art world is expecting, especially if you are a woman artist, a female artist, a femme artist, that you have a partner that is either making the money to boost your career or you know, that you have friends that are helping you. And that's not always the case. And so, I mean, I think professionally, just how can we rethink childcare? How can we rethink supporting single mothers to be able to have that time to make and be able to leave their houses and find the space to make? And then personally, I've realized, you know, there's a million things that people could do to help me. And I am really grateful, you know, during COVID, I've had so many people, you know, dropping off meals or running errands for me, you know, and doing what they can in this time. But it's become very clear to me what support that I need as a single mother is hugs. Mm. I need just somebody at least once a week to come up to me and say, I see you and the work that you're putting in and how hard it is. And I'm just going to sit here and give you an embrace and tell you that it's okay. And I see you and I love you and you're doing the best that you can. I cannot tell you how much I need that. And even looking back before COVID, how much I needed that then. Mm.
I wholeheartedly agree. We need hugs. Yeah. I my brother came to visit from Iowa a couple weeks before Christmas. And I realized when he got here and hugged me, and my sister-in-law hugged me, that was the first hug I had had since the end of September, except for my kids, obviously. And that is valuable and that I cherish my hugs for my kids, but that felt different. And I didn't realize that void until that need was being met. And in fact, I just had a dream the other night. I've been not dreaming. I think, Kaylin, I've talked to you about this. Yeah. Like, I don't remember any dreams from the past, 6 months, maybe even a year. But I've, in the past week or so, had a couple dreams. And one of those was just a big, like, this giant person, faceless person just hugging me, like the dream was a hug, and I took it as the sign of like my body telling me this need needs to be on your list that you make of, you know, what do you need out of your relationships with others. You need hugs. Mm. For sure.
Yeah. I talk about sweetness a lot in my work, and it really comes from this one moment in early, like January 2019. I was dating someone that I was really into, and they kind of caught a glimpse of my ex as he was like harassing me on the phone. And they came up behind me and they wrapped themselves around me and they gave me a hug and just held me. And they were like, they said to me, "You don't deserve this." Mm. And I like something broke in me. I was like, I have not had somebody give me a hug and so sweetly say, "You don't deserve this." And it didn't work out with that person. Obviously we broke up. But that's when I started writing these lists. And number one on the list was sweetness, because it was so incredible to have someone just freely offer me that sweetness and those words and that hug. Mm. So number one, always sweetness.
Yeah. Agreed.
Oh, I love this so much. You guys, I mean, I want more hugs in my life.
And we all need more hugs.
I know. Yeah. Make me cry.
More hugs.
I know.
Yeah.
So good. Okay.
I do think in general, touch is very undervalued.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and especially that like dichotomy between the mother who is touched all the time and like the labor, the physical labor that goes into being a mother. But then, back to this, like, it's almost like Jessica, when you were saying, like, of course, my hugs from my kids like matter and they mean a lot to me. But, you know, it's, I don't know, there's something about it being like, but you care for that. Like, you know,
Well, you're the comforter in that situation. You're not being comforted.
And when it's from somebody who doesn't owe you anything, or you don't feel like you have that like attachment in the same way, it just feels different and fills a different need.
We need all kinds of touch.
I know. We just need it all.
Yeah.
We deserve it all. We do.
We do. Yeah. Okay. Last question. And then we're going to do our final five. This has been so great. I want to hear both of you, because I just appreciate your perspective so much. I know you have such thoughtful things to say, but just want to hear you talk about success for a little bit. Because I think that's something that as mothers, as artists, like we're kind of, as people sort of trapped in this patriarchal society of capitalism and of monetary value and, you know, just kind of cracking the whip over us to like do all, be all, show up, hustle. I feel like we need people like you, like me, standing up and redefining success, like for what it is for us. So I feel like this is such a valuable question for this community. I just want to hear what success means to you, Candida.
Well, I will say pandemic 2020 life has just broken open and blown away all of my past notions of what success is. Mm-hmm. And I could talk about work, but I'll just say work less. and I'm saying that to myself, work less. But one interesting notion of success that came to me, I think sometime this last summer, I was thinking about the healing journey and how there's this notion, and we don't really talk about it, how there is an end game, that at some point we're working towards healing to this point where we have success. And we are healed and we're like dancing in a field or something. I don't know what we're doing at that moment. But it's actually never ending. You're never going to get there. It's a lifetime thing. And you know, how much of that is monetized, is influenced by capitalism, by colonization, you know, this idea of like, you got to keep working on yourself, keep working on yourself, keep working on yourself. And I was thinking about it and I was like, wait a second. I left my abusive partner. I am one of the first in my family, because, you know, there's other women who have been in the situation who have done that. Mm-hmm. I have said, I do not want my children to look at this and think that this is normal and then just repeat it in their own relationships. I left. I broke a cycle. Mm-hmm. Can't I say that? Yo, that was a huge raging success.
Yes.
And maybe that's it. Maybe that's all I'm supposed to do in this lifetime. Like, what do I think I need to work on more stuff? That was a huge thing that I just did. I just won. I won. Mm-hmm. I won it. I won the game. And, you know, maybe now I can just like, there is nothing more to work towards. I can if I want to, but like, you know, that was the big goal of my life, maybe. So there, success. And that was such a strange thing to think about, because, and I still struggle with that in my head, because we are so trained to, like, there is no ultimate success. You just, you keep building on top of it, moving and moving and growing, growing. And no, mm-hmm. no, like I, like that needs to stop, at least in my own life. Like I am successful mm. right now.
Perspective yeah. shift.
Yeah.
Jessica.
I think about this question all the time. And I think I love what you said, Candida, that's enough, and that you can define that for yourself. I think success to me is reaching a point where I belong to myself mm-hmm. and I'm not answering to other standards. I want that for myself. I know that I'm not there yet, but that's where my journey is headed, is this evaluation and reevaluation of my actions and my behavior and my pursuits, you know, in looking at why is this important to me? Where is that coming from? Checking all of that against, you know, is it authentic to me, or is it just something I think I should do to please somebody? What am I chasing, you know? Mm. And so, you know, I'm to a point where I want to be a professional artist. I want artist to be my title. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what that looks like or where I'm headed with that. I mean, I have a clearer idea of it than I did a year ago, but as far as, you know, knowing a path that leads to this institution or this gallery or this, you know, income level, I don't have any of that stuff figured out yet. I think I'm still trying to point my compass and, like, kind of fix my compass, like, and just making sure that it's pointing where I want it to go,
yeah.
And where I care to venture. And I don't know. I think success is figuring out what's important to me and what matters, and then doing that unapologetically.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Final five questions. This has been so wonderful. I want to hug both of you right now. final five questions are just for us to get to know you a little bit better. So Candida, can you share, who's your biggest art crush?
Oh my God. Right off the top of my head, I'm just going to reach back into time and Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Hard to beat. Mm-hmm. Jessica, yes. What about you? Biggest art crush?
I mean, he's one of my all-time favorites too. You know, if I could travel back in time to any art scene, that's probably where I would go. To just see him paint would be amazing. Mm-hmm. But living art crushes, I really have two that I just can't get enough of. Nick Cave is just amazing. I follow his recent exhibition Until. It's a traveling exhibition, and so I follow the hashtag on Instagram and just kind of drool over all of the pictures that people take of that work. I hope to see it in person someday. The other one for me is Swoon. And she's just incredible. I think kind of what I see in both of them that really fascinates me is just like their ability to create these worlds mm-hmm. and just these complex structures that are just, you know, dripping with meaning and energy and beauty that just invite people in. And yeah, I'm just in awe of both of them.
My stepdaughter has a swoon print that is signed to her, specifically to Destiny. And I can't tell you how many times I've tried to steal that thing. She won't let me. So anyways.
Amazing.
So cool. Okay. COVID be gone. Let's move to travel. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on? Candida, you can start.
I travel all the time to Puerto Rico, and that will be the first place. I've already told my kids once we can travel again, we're going to go there for at least a month. And I mean, my dream ultimately one day is to have a place down there. So, if anybody is listening and has a place down there that they would like to give to me, I will gladly take it off my hands. You know, it could be inland, it could be on the ocean. Don't care. I will take it.
Awesome.
Jessica, what about you?
So I have family kind of scattered around the country and chosen family. And when COVID ends, I will be hopping from Portland, Oregon to Buena Vista, Colorado to Kansas City to, I mean, Des Moines, Iowa, but that's where I grew up, to Mobile, Alabama, to New York City, to Paris, Tennessee.
That's right.
I'm just excited to be able to say, hey, I miss you. Let me look at flights. Let's make a long weekend of it. That's what I really miss.
Okay, back to you, Candida. What film or book has inspired you greatly?
Oh, I really hate these questions because I'm like, how can I choose just one?
Just one, just one.
You know, I'm going to choose an author. I'm going to say Octavia Butler. In 2018 or 2019, I took the whole year to read all of her work. I even like searched out her unpublished book and found it. And yeah, her work is just so inspiring and extraordinary and groundbreaking. And you know, this person who manifested what she wanted and wasn't afraid to break boundaries and wasn't afraid when everybody was telling her a Black woman can't be a science fiction author. Mm-hmm. She was like, all right, let's just see what happens, you know? So yeah, Octavia Butler, all of
them. So good. Jessica, what about you?
I haven't read any Octavia Butler, so I'm going that was a really good description. I'm going to need to do that. One book that has really been important for me in the past 18 months is Women Who Run With the Wolves by Clarissa
Pinkola Estes.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. I think.
You're right. Yeah. And you know, I'm a really slow reader. It takes me a long time to process reading and pages. And so that's one that I just pick up now and then. And every time I do, there's something really life-changing that I read. I've been kind of reconnecting with two of my grad school friends over the course of COVID. I was able to spend New Year's Eve with them last year before COVID started. And so we started kind of a book club around women who run with the wolves. And it's just been an amazing time to reconnect and kind of process that book, all three of us. So it's been really good.
Great suggestions, both of you. Okay, back to Candida. What's your favorite meal?
Again, I'm like, how do I choose just one? The first thing that came to my mind right now was ensalada de pulpo, octopus salad, specifically from La Taza de Oro in New York, which closed like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. They had the best. I would kill for that right now.
That sounds delicious.
I love that. Jessica, what about you?
Yeah. So I think right now what I cook for myself that I'm, you know, kind of obsessed with, I don't know, I go through like, I don't know, every couple months there's something that I cook all the time. Mm-hmm. And right now it's ramen with an egg poached in it with some roasted veggies added in. I think that's just super delicious.
That's the but only it's always my 9-year-old will eat.
Really? Well, you got a smart 9-year-old.
Apparently, yeah.
Or I cook like a 9-year-old, which is also entirely true.
Okay, and last, I just like to offer you a space to give a shout out to someone. Just picking one, if you can, who supports you in your work. I know, you know, if you're anything like me, I know there's lots of people who you would want to share. But yeah, just giving a shout out to somebody who really you feel like is very supportive of what you're trying to do in the world and who you want to be. Candida.
Well, since I can only shout out one person, and there are so many, there really are, I am going to shout out my 9-year-old Coco, because from the very beginning, she's been like, Mom, you're going to be famous. You're so good at what you do. Like your art, like, and every time she looks at a piece of my jewelry, she's like, oh, it's amazing. I love it. You know, and just that pure, yeah. I believe in you. I love what you do. I believe in you.
Mm, love that. Jessica, what about you?
I really hate this question, Kaylin, because I have the most incredible village around me right now, and I could not be doing what I am doing without any of them. It's really such an eye-opening experience to come out of this relationship where I was alone completely. And now I'm not in a relationship, but I'm surrounded by love. It's impossible for me to pick one person right now.
Save my village.
So, yeah, so lifted up by my family, my friends, my artist community, artist mother community. It's an enormous feeling of just love and gratitude for everyone in my life right now.
I'm so glad. All right. Last, Candida, where can people find more about you and your work? What are your Instagram handles, websites, all that?
Yeah. So I have two Instagrams. I have my jewelry Instagram, which is hashtag Las Ranas Jewelry. LASRANAS jewelry. And then my personal Instagram, where I showcase, well, pre-COVID, I showcased a lot of my consultant and other public artwork. Now it's like a lot of pictures of my kids and me with my head on my floor. But that is at Candida612. So you can follow me both places.
Love it. Jessica, what about you?
Yeah, my Instagram is JessicaKitzman_Xylem, Xylem. And then my website is jessicakitzman.com.
Awesome. Thank you both so much. Mm-hmm. What a great conversation. So inspiring.
This was amazing.
It was.
Thank you, Kaylin.
Yes.
And thank you, Candida. This was so great.
So good. Thank you so, so much. Appreciate it.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.